Hello, this is Darragh Maloney and you're very welcome to the programme. Our guest in this edition is one of the finest boxers of his generation and a man who maintained the famed Belfast tradition of medalling at the Olympic Games when, in 1992, he took silver in the bantamweight division.
Former Commonwealth flyweight champion Wayne McCullough had been an Irish medal hopeful from early on.
Yes, he's done it. He's done it. We don't mind about scores. He's done it.
Wayne McCullough, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Great to talk to you. You're talking to us from Las Vegas.
Yep, been here 31 years.
Just the 31 years?
I came for three and I stayed for 31.
That's amazing. So you love life there?
It grew on me at the beginning. It started at the beginning. First couple of years, I was homesick every week and just sort of settled down and I liked it.
I can hear a few little Americanisms in your accent, but you're still pure Belfast, my friend.
Yeah, I've got you get that little bit of a twang now because when I first came here, nobody could understand me.
Yes, so you had to make some compromises.
Yeah, just sort of slow down a little bit, and you're talking to Americans. They talk slow anyway. So, but of course, the Americans love my accent. Just speak to me.
And you're out there. That was. It came about because of your move into the professional ranks.
Yes, after the Olympics in '92. I couldn't fight for like 6 months because I had the cheekbone was fractured in three places, the busted nerve in the semi-finals. And so I took my time, and then Eddie Fudge, if anybody knows boxing, Eddie Fudge is probably the best coach that ever lived, or top three. Trained Joe Frazier back in the day, and at 82 years old, he decided to take me on. And he was based in Las Vegas. And so I had to move from Belfast, Northern Ireland, to Las Vegas, Nevada. It was a hard move because I was a homebird. But when you're going to Eddie Fudge, you can't turn him down, you know what I mean?
Let's go back to the start of your boxing career, Wayne. How did you get into boxing in the first place?
My two older brothers, like they're 6 and 7 years older, they were boxing. My oldest brother brought a trophy home one night, and I was about 7 years old. And I looked at the trophy, it was probably about 2 inches tall. And I said, oh, I want one of them. So I just went to the boxing gym, and back then I played football. Played rugby, did cross-country running, and boxing was the one sport that came natural to me. It wasn't easy, but I had my first fight after about 6 months. I was 8 years old, and I remember winning my first fight by stoppage in the second round, and it just took off from there. Boxing was the one sport that it just sort of came natural to me.
And when did you start to think about possibly being at the Olympic Games?
About 15. I remember I told my friends in Belfast, and I ran about with a bunch of, we were getting up to no good, but I was training every day, running every day, and I told my friends that I'm going to get to the Olympics and I'm going to be a world champion someday. And they looked at me like, they didn't look at me like it was nuts, because they knew I was doing all the hard work. I was always running up the hills, always going to the gym, staying out of trouble, and they knew I had the dedication to focus on it, and I did that.
So that conversation with your pals when you're 15, 2 years later, you qualify to go to Seoul in 1988.
It was weird because that year I won the All-Ireland Youth under 18, juniors, and then seniors all within like 10 months or something. I stopped everybody too. I stopped them all within sight of distance. And I weighed 7.5 stone. I was only a small guy. I was tiny, still small, but back then I was even smaller. That year I fought a Cuban and knocked a Cuban out. I knocked a Scottish guy out. Then I knocked a Canadian out, who was actually a Turo Getty, the legendary professional world champion fighter too. So that I had a good year that year, and that was the Olympic year when I was 17. More or less, you qualify by winning the nationals then. Now you have to qualify through the whole system.
You ended up as the Irish flag bearer in the opening ceremony. What was that like?
Well, I was the youngest member of the team, and they approached me and asked me, you're the youngest member and you get the honor to carry the flag. And then they tried to bring a bit of politics into it as well, because I was from the Shankill Road in Belfast. And I was like, of course. Pat McCrory, the late Pat McCrory, he passed away. He asked me, and I'm like, yeah, I'm a sportsman, not a politician, and I'll do it no problems. I'm fighting for Ireland. I'm honored to do that. And there's only one person every 4 years gets to do that. And I got the honor.
And at that age, Wayne, were you aware of the political sort of ramifications, the political side of you carrying that flag?
Yes, because I was born on the Shankill Road, actually. I was born at home on the Shankill Road, and I lived there until I on the suburbs until I left to come to Las Vegas. Mm. And most of my friends I grew up with were, I knew what they were doing. And I say, I always stayed out of trouble. And I knew, but it's sport, you know, and sport brings people together, always did. Boxing always brought people together, you know. And when I came back home, no problems at all. They actually had a celebration for me in the Highfield Estate and marched me down the Shanga Road with a flute band, believe it or not, a Shanga Road Defender flute band. They marched me down and had a celebration for me. So there was no bitterness. And it just goes to show that the Shango can show positive things as well.
Yeah. Did you ever get, was there ever any negativity towards you fighting for Ireland?
No, but I'm sure people were saying it under their breath.
Okay.
I was honored. You know, I represented Ireland probably 50 times or something. I represented Northern Ireland in the Commonwealth Games. So it's what I wanted to do and say to me, it didn't matter what color you were, what religion you were. You know, I had Catholic friends growing up right through the troubles and everything. Yeah. And I had no problems at all.
We have some lovely archive, just a reminder of your campaign in Seoul in 88. Have a listen to this, Wayne.
Mid-afternoon in Seoul outside an American army base. Another student rally, one of many over the last few months, has just ended. The Olympics will proceed. Those attending the Olympics will probably not notice any violence whatsoever. Anti-terrorist preparations have been thorough. Plainclothes policemen were even part of today's recreation of a royal dynasty procession, as nearly 1,500 men in the colourful tunics of ancient royal officials, palace guards, foot troops and warriors marched in formation, many carrying swords, banners and flags. It's a small sample of the pageantry and colour you'll see in the opening ceremony on Saturday. Yesterday's full rehearsal impressed all who saw it. Carrying the flag for Ireland in the opening ceremony on Saturday will be boxer Wayne McCullough.
Well, there you go, Wayne. What do you remember about the action in the ring?
I've never even heard that. It's fantastic.
Isn't it?
I know there was a lot of trouble going on over in Seoul at the time. But yeah. I remember standing in the stadium beside the stadium that we walked into, like the practice track, and people were getting pictures with me with the flag standing there. And then you walk out into probably 2 billion people around the world. I think it was a good thing for Ireland, Northern Ireland, to see that positive side of things. For sport, you know what I mean?
Wayne, let's jump forward 4 years to Barcelona. Change in weight. You went up in weight from the 7.5 stone. I think it was about time you left the 7.5 stone right there. but just take me back to that time. Like, did you feel after Seoul, right, this is my destiny. I'm going to get back. I'm going to go to Barcelona and I'm going to win a medal.
Yeah, well, the first Olympics in Seoul, I was a kid still. I barely turned 18. Just getting there, the experience alone was unbelievable. And you're walking about the village and you see all the top athletes from around the globe. They're sort of starstruck. Then the second time around, you get all the experience. I just turned 22. You know, I just won a World Cup bronze medal in 1990. And it put me in the top five in the world. So I was sort of like one of the favorites to get at least a bronze. And my goal was to get at least a bronze. And then I got a silver, and of course you're still, you know, you're still sort of disappointed in a way. But when you win a medal of any color, you know, people of Ireland to this day, they remember where they were when the fight was taking place. They often stopped when I was home at Christmas there, and people stopped me, like Belfast down in Dublin, saying, "Oh, I remember I was watching your fight." And I'm like, it's amazing that people actually remember something like that, because it just, as I say, just brings the whole country together when the Olympics comes on. And we got a gold and a silver and one Olympics, me and Michael, when there was no special funding for the fighters back then. It was just, you know, you had a day job, you were working, I was unemployed. You're like a part-time fighter, really. And we bring back a gold and a silver in the men's, which is the best Olympics they ever had in men's.
How important was Michael Carruth to you that time?
Me and Michael had traveled the world. We were good friends and stuff. And, you know, a lot of joking going on with this. There's always a lot of the fighters always joke around and sort of, you know, have fun. They just take their training seriously and the fight seriously, but we always have fun because you've got a lot of free time. We're like two good buddies together, and to get medals together was just the icing on the cake, you know what I mean?
Because Wayne, Michael has been on this program talking about Barcelona and his gold medal, and he's spoken in glowing terms about you, as you describe his friend. In today's terms, do you know, it's kind of, I was listening to that, and I'm listening to you talk about Michael now. It's sort of a bromance that the two of you had and still have.
Shut up. No, I met him. I was back home a couple of years ago, and my daughter really hadn't met him before. And me and Michael just started talking to each other like we'd never left. And she more or less said the same thing. It's like a bromance.
Yeah, oh, there you go. We have some memories to share with you now, Wayne. Have a listen to this from Barcelona in 92.
Wayne McCulloch started this fight at a furious pace. There was little known about the Iraqi Ahmed Aboud, and McCulloch's style didn't give the Iraqi any chance to demonstrate his skills. Despite a slight injury, McCulloch won by 10 points to 2.
Definitely got enough. In the first round, I had him the right cross, and I thought I had him away. Then I went and hit him a left hook. His elbow hit into my muscle. I'm dead in the whole arm. For two rounds, I couldn't throw my left hook at all. My left hook's my best punch. My arm was completely dead from then on.
Former Commonwealth flyweight champion Wayne McCulloch had been an Irish medal hopeful from early on, but the bantamweight division today saw him evenly pitted against Mohamed Sabo of Nigeria. Under the pressure of repeated blows, the Nigerian began to fade in round three, earning McCulloch 31 points to Sabo's 13.
Yes, he's done it. He's done it. We don't mind about scores. He's done it.
The hardest hitting and the strongest fight I've ever fought in my life. Every time I hit him, it was just like hitting a wall. And every time he hit me, it was like getting hit by concrete.
Irish interest is already building on our boxers, going for gold against the Cubans.
I always come out here and my aim was to get to the final. My aim was actually to get the gold medal, so it still is.
In the bantamweight final, the Cuban Joel Casamayor caught Wayne McCulloch with a nasty right hook early in the second round. With the Irishman's eye now badly swollen, it was just a matter of hanging on. In the final round, partial revival as McCulloch produces some of the best punches seen during the 2 weeks. Unfortunately, it wasn't enough. The Cuban took the title with a comfortable margin.
My face just went numb. The teeth were numb from the AR fight, and my face just went completely numb.
What do you think of that, Wayne?
I remember the Korean I beat. He beat the world champion Todorov in the quarterfinals, and he was favored for gold, and then I beat him. But he busted my cheek, and to this day, on the left side of my nose, I've got tingling right down to my lip, and my lip is numb after that fight. But you know, the doctors don't touch your face. They look at your hands and make you black eyes. And there was no way I was pulling out of the final. There's no way. I may have kept a little bit of a secret, but yeah. Nicholas Cruz Hernandez, he knew there was something wrong with it. But getting that fight, I say, as soon as he hit me in the he hit me a good jab on the face. If you look at the fight, I just shook my head as if, what's going on here? Because I was like electricity going down my left side. I'd never experienced pain in my life, but it happened in the Olympic final. And then I went out in the last round and guns blazing. You know, I won the last round. First round was even, second round he won. And I thought he just won a close fight. I thought it should have been a bit closer than it was. Even the first round, if you look at it, when I come back to the corner, I looked at the scorecard. You could look at the scores outside the ring. And I did a double take on it. And like, this is like, don't look at the score. Don't worry about that. Just focus on this. Then the second round, I got hurt. I had blood coming out the corner of my eye from my cheek, underneath my cheek. I wasn't cut. And then one of the commentators said I was cut. I wasn't cut. Yeah. The blood was seeping from my cheek out the corner of my left eye. But I was going to go down fight. You know what I mean? It was my last amateur fight. I remember coming back to Ireland. Mm. And the doctor said to me, had the cheekbone moved? I cracked in three places. He said, had it moved, my career was over. So he would have had to put a steel plate in my face and I couldn't have fought again. People remember the last round. And I was sitting in the drug testing room after it. And I remember watching Michael Cruz Olympic final in the dressing room while I'm sitting beside Joel Casamayor, who just beat me.
Oh my word.
And then, of course, to this day, Joel Casamayor lives in Las Vegas. He defected in 96, came to Vegas. We met up. And the first time we met each other, it was like, holy smoke. It was like we were like a bromance as well. And the funny short story, last year we were at another gym. I was down there for sparring. One of my fighters was sparring. Joel was one of the coaches. And the lady who owns the gym put on our Olympic final while we're standing there. And everybody started watching our Olympic final.
Oh, my. Wayne, you mentioned a name there that, you know, younger listeners will not have an awareness of, but I remember him well. You, of course, and Michael remember him so well. Nicholas Cruz. I loved him. He was an amazing character and a brilliant, brilliant trainer.
Nicholas Cruz Hernandez is the best thing that Irish boxing's ever had. You know, Austin Cruz was in the corner with us then, Michael's dad. Great man. But Nicholas was the type of guy who who brought the technical stuff to Irish boxing. We had him in 88. He didn't go to the Olympics with us, but he trained us in 88. He trained me in 1990 for the Commonwealth Games. I won gold there. I won a World Cup bronze, which is Ireland's only World Cup medal to this day. And then I won a silver in 92 and Michael got gold. So Nictus is responsible for all that. I talk to Nictus every other week, and now he's not part of the Irish squad, which is ridiculous. And a lot of politics, but Nicholas Cruz should be the front man of Irish boxing, and I'll say that in front of anybody. He should be, because Michael's success was partly down to Nicholas Cruz Hernandez, and he's the greatest coach that Ireland's ever had.
That's some tribute to him, a fitting tribute, absolutely. Let's just jump away from the silver medal itself for a moment and go forward a few days to when you actually came back to Ireland, landed in Dublin Airport. I was actually there all evening and into the wee small hours of the morning waiting for this flight to come back home. What were your memories of that night?
It was unbelievable because my wife, who was my girlfriend at the time, she got on the flight with us as well. So everybody was getting on Aer Lingus flight. It was fantastic. We arrived in Dublin, you say it was early hours of the morning. Packed. The airport was packed. I was took back by it. I really was. I was took back, and next day we get up, and I don't know how many people was in O'Connell Street. Michael always said it was 150,000, yeah. So I'll believe him. That was on the top of a bus. It was holy smoke. To this day, I still get the emotions. It just goes to show that with the people, just came out for two medalists. You know what I mean? Gold and a silver medalist. It was unbelievable. I can't even put words to it. I really can't. Yeah. This day, and
brilliant.
Ireland was celebrating for 6 months.
Yes, I think it was longer. It was a bit longer than that. I know, Wayne, in the past you have spoken about that there was a controversy at the time when Michael was not invited up to Belfast. Let's hear Michael take up the story.
I've invited Wayne down for a weekend, him and his girlfriend, our fiance, Cheryl. So he's going to return the compliment, and I will go up and say, so us two, whatever the troubles are, like, me and Wayne will always be friends, and nothing will ever break that.
Did that hurt you, Wayne?
Hurt me. It threw me like a dagger. The funny thing about it is, Olympics in 88, Olympics in 92, I was unemployed. And then when I went down to the unemployment office, I told them I was going to the Olympic training camp, and they said, well, you're not fighting for us, so you're not getting any money. And I was like, I'm fighting for the whole country. You're not fighting for it. You're fighting for Ireland. You're not fighting for us, so you're not getting your unemployment for the next 6 weeks. Going back to 92, and I remember walking into the city hall, and I didn't, Michael wasn't there, so I just thought he wasn't there. I didn't really know. I thought it was a reception just for the, like, the Northern Ireland. And then Pat McCrory said to me, you know, the Lord Mayor wasn't going to have this reception. I'm like, what? Because you weren't fighting for, I'm like, what? Wasn't fighting. I remember everybody was in at the dining table, like where they're getting their dinner. And I was still in the hallway ready to walk out. And the Lord Mayor was there. I walked over to him. I just looked at him and I said, you don't know anything about sport, politics, anything, bringing people together. I said, I'm not going into this reception. I'm leaving. I'm walking out this door and I'm leaving. I was disgusted. Michael could walk up a Shanga Road with me. I don't care. And nobody would say anything to him. He could do that to this day. And the door's always open there for him. I mean, but then back in 92, it was still pretty bad back home, but Michael was always welcome. And probably especially in the city centre of Belfast and the city hall, that's for everybody. It doesn't matter what religion you are.
Yeah, because you mentioned, 1992, it was a different island back then, wasn't it, Wayne?
It wasn't. You probably hear it. It hurt me more than anything. I don't care about the reception. That didn't bother me. Because Michael not being invited after the way they treated me in Dublin, the people at the airport, the O'Connell Street, I didn't have that same reception in Belfast. I didn't have that. You know what I mean? Some people give me a few things, but it wasn't the same celebration. It wasn't. And then to find out they weren't even going to have a reception for me at the City Hall. Well, maybe somebody has something in for me, because the funny thing is, when I won the World Championship, WBC, Ireland's first WBC belt, I never got a reception at City Hall either. So maybe the thought back to then.
Oh, my word.
You know what I mean? So it's just, I'm from Belfast. Everybody knows where I'm from, but I don't care what you are. Really don't. I mean, Michael and me have been friends. We fought in the amateurs together way before the Olympics. We traveled around the world together. And he's my friend, you know what I mean? He's a lot of people on the team. Paul Griffin was a great friend of mine. He was on the Olympic team. Eamon McGee from Ardoyne, you know.
Yeah.
He's my good friend to this day. We just talked the other week. You know, so I've got good friends on both sides, and I just hate it when the politicians sort of they're working for both people, the Protestants and Catholics, especially in Belfast, and then they don't invite somebody up. That's just beyond it. 92 was sort of like a war zone still, and I left in the beginning of 93 to come here, and Belfast was still home to me, but it was different. It was different back then. 92 was different from what it is today.
Powerful stuff, Wayne. When you did leave home, when you did leave Belfast and landed in Las Vegas, it was the start of another incredible adventure, because you had this amazing professional career. You mentioned about that WBC world title. Just remind our listeners of how the professional game went for you. And my word, it went extremely well.
Yeah, the thing, turning pro, first of all, coming to Eddie Fudge, it was like somebody playing in the Irish soccer league, the Irish football league, and somebody saying to him, "Oh, do you want to go to the Premier League?" And he's saying, "No." You know, it was a no-brainer. Eddie Fudge was like the guy that everybody wanted to go to then. And I said, 82 years old, took me on. I come to Las Vegas, jump into the gym, and all of a sudden, after being an amateur for 14 years, after getting Olympic medal, Commonwealth gold, world bronze, he put me in front of the mirror just and said, "Start doing this, working your defense, working this." It's like I never knew anything. And it was crazy that I thought being an Olympic medalist and traveling the world, you sort of think you know everything, you know what I mean? You think, I know everything, but you know nothing. When I came to Eddie, it was like I knew nothing, completely nothing. And I just wanted to keep learning, keep fighting, keep learning. And I did. I had my first 7 fights as a professional in 16 weeks, which is unheard of. I went from a 4-round fighter to a 10-round fighter. My first 10-round fight was, I fought in February, my pro debut. And then I fought in Belfast in June, my first main event as a 10-rounder. And then I wanted to go and fight in Dublin. I fought in Dublin in September and a 10-rounder as well in 93. And my goal was to fight in Belfast and Dublin every year as a pro. And I did that the first few years until I defended my belt in Belfast, which I wanted to have my first defense in Belfast. But I wanted to have my second in Dublin because I'm from Belfast, but I fought my career in Dublin. And I did that for the people as well. And that's what I wanted to do. And the WBC belt, anybody who knows boxing, if you look at the great Muhammad Ali, he had the WBC belt. You know, you look at the modern day fighters like Floyd Mayweather, WBC belt. And I'm not disrespecting any other belts, because mm-hmm. Katie Taylor's, she's the only other Irish person who's won a WBC belt. She's got 2 of them now. And I was the first Irish person to win a WBC belt, but that was my goal. Not disrespecting WBA, IBF, WBO. I just want, maybe because I see Muhammad Ali as a kid, I wanted a green and gold belt, and it's fitting too for an Irishman, green and gold.
Yeah, brilliant.
You know, so I wanted that.
These few days and those fights in Barcelona changed your life in the most beautiful way. Where is that Olympic silver medal now?
I'm sitting in my display room, which has got like a seat, I've got a TV in front, I've got all the posters and like pictures around the wall, and some artists have given me paintings, including Bono. Bono's given me a few paintings of these.
Not that we're name dropping.
No, we're not name dropping. But he sent me one for my 50th. He said, instead of Wayne is my word, the little pictures. But my medal's sitting right there, right beside my WBC belt. And when people come in, I always think, well, they always want to see your Olympic medal. I'm like, but I'm world WBC champion. Yeah. Where's your Olympic medal? Where's your Olympic medal? The Olympics has a, they just want to see that Olympic medal. You know, professional boxing is tough. Normally it's a tough game and it's 12 rounds, but they want to see that Olympic medal. They always want to see the Olympic medal first, and they hold it in their hand and like, I can't believe I'm holding an Olympic medal. They're like, almost like frightened of it. I'm like, here, put it around your neck. No, no. I said, put it around your neck. Come on. And they put it around their neck and they're like, whoa, I can't believe this. I can't believe this. So it's just, it's great that I can do that for people and they get that feeling. You know what I mean?
Well, it's a priceless piece of Irish sporting history.
It is, because I think when I won the silver medal in 82, we hadn't won one from 1956 in boxing. So it's we've won two since then, but since 92. But it was a long period. We hadn't won a gold. Mike, we got the gold. We hadn't won a silver since 56. So it just goes to show you the span of not getting medals.
Wayne McCullough, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me on.